If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Pulitzer Prize winning author Ira Burko covered sports for over two decades in the New York Times. He's written 26 books, and his latest is Baseball's Best Ever, a half century of covering Hall of Famers. And most importantly, he is a graduate of Sullivan High School in Chicago. We can't forget that, can we, Ira?
No, not at all. June of 1957. So it was like when dinosaurs roamed the world.
Listen, this is a terrific book, a terrific collection of your columns. I love the piece on Lou Boudreau. We think we know all about him around here, but I learned a few really interesting things about Boudreau I never knew. First, the connection between Boudreau and Bill Veeck was pretty important, wasn't it?
Oh yeah. Well, Veeck was the owner of the Cleveland Indians, and he fired the manager in about 1941 or so, or 42, and he made the 24-year-old shortstop the manager of the Cleveland Indians, and Boudreau became, I guess, maybe the youngest. Our second youngest manager in the history of Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. And he was from Harvey, Illinois, which was a suburb, of course, of Chicago. And what is not known, and what I had in the article, and which was taken out for some reason, but Lou Boudreau is half Jewish. His mother was Jewish. And I wondered about that. There have been, very few Jews in the major leagues. And so I when I called him, I was assigned to do the obituary. And we do advance obituaries at the New York Times. And so I called him and informed him that everyone dies at some point. We hope that you live forever, Lou, but the odds are you won't. And so I'm just calling you because since you're a Hall of Famer, you're going to be in the you're going to have a major obituary in the New York Times, and I was assigned to write it. And he said, "That's no problem." He said, "So go ahead and ask the questions." And for some reason, I don't know how or why, but I read that his mother was Jewish. And so he said, "That's true." He said, "My parents broke up when I was a small child, and I went with my dad, who was a French Catholic, Boudreau, and but I would go to Seder's at my mother's house." So I don't know why the New York Times editor took this one paragraph out that he was Jewish, because he would be the third Jew in the Baseball Hall of Fame following Koufax and Hank Greenberg.
Interesting.
So Jews have, there are 2.5 Jews in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
I learned from your book that Boudreau was the guy who really ended Joe DiMaggio's 56 game hitting streak, right?
Yeah. Well, he was the manager of the Indians, and actually, it was the third baseman, Ken Keltner. DiMaggio had hit in 56 straight games, and it was, and then he hit two smashes to third base. And Ken Keltner was the Indians' third baseman, and he threw DiMaggio out both times, and so that ended the streak, DiMaggio went on to hit, I think, in another 40 straight games or something. But he was always sorry that he missed out on Heinz ketchup. They advertised 57 varieties, something like that. And And he only had 56, so he didn't qualify for an advertisement in the Heinz 57 tomato sauce.
I thought Boudreaux was the guy who went in the hole and got that last one, but it was the third baseman, really. I have to go back and look at that column. Let me ask.
As memory tries to serve me, Boudreaux may have gotten the last one, but the two hits that would have been hits were to Ken Keltner, the third baseman.
You write about Tom Seaver in 1985. Your account of the day that he got his 300th win when he was with the White Sox really captured the emotion of the day. Seaver was really nervous, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. And I got to be quite friendly with Seaver. And he was funny, but he was nervous. And his wife and his two daughters were at the game, and as was I. And we rooted for Seaver because he was, as far as ball players are concerned, he was kind of an intellectual. He knew baseball history, and he was fun to be around. And I have a picture in 1969 when the Mets shockingly won the National League pennant and then the World Series, and Seaver was the star, and he was the Cy Young winner, and he was the number one player on the Mets, when I was working for Newspaper Enterprise Association, which was a national feature syndicate, and they asked me to ask Seaver if he would write a column once a week, baseball column, and I was a sports editor. And so I called Seaver, who I knew somewhat, but got to know much better, and he said yes. And but the way the column worked is I would call him, and we would talk over something that was in the baseball news, and then I would write it up. And then one day he said to me, he was a journalism major at USC. He didn't graduate, but I think he left to play baseball in his junior year in college. And so he said, you know, he said, Ira, he said, I'd like to write this column myself. Without your help. I appreciate your help, but I want to do it myself. I said, great, which means that I don't have to do any work. So the column was supposed to be in like about 4 o'clock. So now it's 2:30, no column, 3 o'clock, no column, 3:30, no column. And so I called him. He was living in California. And he was living in Connecticut at the time. And I called him and I said, Tom, your column hasn't come in yet. He said, Ira, he said, I sat down with a foolscap paper. I went to the library with foolscap paper to write the column. And I wrote he wanted to write a column on Henry Aaron, who was his hero. He loved Henry Aaron. And he said, so now I wrote about halfway down the page, and I didn't have anything more to say. Well, Tom was not a professional writer. And so I guess I passed for a professional writer in those days. And so I said, Tom, let's talk. Let's talk. And so we talked, and we got the column out, and he was appreciative. And from that point forward, he let me ask the questions and write the column.
Ira, listen to this from your book. DiMaggio hit two smashes down the third baseline, which Keltner stopped, throwing him out. On DiMaggio's last chance to keep his streak alive in the eighth inning, he grounded a ball up the middle. It took a bad hop. Boudreaux said, I was able to get it, and I threw him out, ending the streak. It's from the book Baseball's Best Ever. You ought to read it, Ira. It's pretty good.
Well, that just shows how ignorant a sports writer can be.
More with Ira Burko momentarily.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
Chicago's very own Ira Burko is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. His latest book is Baseball's Best Ever, A Half Century of Covering Hall of Famers. Dave?
Ira, good morning. I have to ask you about some of the rule changes, because I wonder, as someone who's been around the game for so long, how you think some of the greats that you write about in your book would have reacted. And I guess I'm thinking a little bit about the aforementioned Ted Williams, who faced shifts, and you wonder what he would have done had the shift been outlawed back then.
Yeah, well, I mean, Ted was had his own views of things and thought that when they had that Williams shift, that three players on the right side of the infield, and he was a left-handed batter, and he refused to hit to left field. And he said, "The hell with them! I'm going to get my hits this way." Well, I mean, he got a lot of hits that way, but he would have gotten more hits hitting to the opposite field. But I don't like the idea you have to have two players on each side of second base, two infielders on each side of second base. I don't understand why they made the bases bigger. Maybe because they felt that they could have more stolen bases. I do like the aspect of time. I thought a pitcher has to throw a pitch with what 15 or 20 seconds rather than dawdling around on the mound and playing with the rosin bag. So that I approve of, but the others are to me inconsequential. And the batter, fooling with his batting gloves, like Garcia Pera was the worst of all for the shortstop for the Red Sox. I mean, he might extend the game of an hour. he's going in and out of the batter's box.
Yeah, I remember when he came to the Cubs watching that. You know what's fascinating? All of these great Hall of Famers, and most of them made less than $100,000. I think Ernie Banks, the most he made, as you point out, $65,000. But there was the love of the game that drew them, correct?
Yeah. Well, it was. But my favorite Hall of Famer was Bob Surratt. I remember Bob Surratt. I was friends with his brother, older brother, by a number of years, Herb Surratt, and I remember going to their apartment on Ridgeway? On Ridgeway, and you lived on, I think, on the second floor, possibly second or third floor. Mm-hmm. And I remember you were like 10 years old, and you were in a room by yourself with earphones, and you were fooling with the radio or a record player, and I said to your brother, "What's he doing?"
No good came out of that.
I've never seen that before. I don't think I'd ever seen the earphones before.
This is where I always stop the interview when the story comes around to me. It's baseball's best ever. A half century of covering Hall of Famers, Ira Burko, and tremendous stories not only about some great Cubs and Sox, but all of the greats of decades of baseball. Yeah, Ira, this book is going to live on my nightstand here for a long, long time, because I really enjoy going through it, and it's good to talk to you again.
Well, it's good to talk to you, and it's good to have such a great relationship with us, Bob. I appreciate that.
Stay well, my friend.
Okay.